when they hopped on airplane to come up to the level. We have five papers.
Yeah, he's coming, okay. Just let me just take the opportunity to make a few reminders. One is those of you that you wish to be IREP members and have not completed the form, you can still do it and hand it either to Ian or to the registration desk that will hand it back to Ian. The second announcement has to do with the visit after lunch to Knossos and the Archaeological Museum of Heraklion. We have achieved a reduced entrance fee from the Ministry of Culture of Greece, but those that are either below 18 or above 65 are allowed to a free entrance. And so are all the students that have student identification coming from the European Union. So if you happen to be in any of these categories, please have your ID with you and let the guides know so that there's no need to charge the reduced entrance fee since you are allowed to free. Okay, and the other reminder is that we have to leave sharply at 1:15, so you should be by the buses by 1 o'clock after the end of this discussion. So thank you for... One last thing, sorry, it's part of the discussion, but I would like to apologize to Mr. Mancarella for mixing up his country affiliation.
The country was correct, actually.
No. What I wanted to say, I make a list of things that were not perfect in this conference. Okay. So thanks for pointing this out. The country allocation was done automatically by the Open Conf system, depending on the corresponding author. But we should have made sure that all the countries listed in the author should be there. And also apologize for those that are not able to read the lower part of the projections.
Rodrigo Ramos from University of São Paulo, Brazil. My question is to Sandro Corsi. First of all, congratulations on the presentation. And you've shown two different topologies on your presentation and on the paper. One is a meshed grid, the other one is a radial feeder. I'd like to, and this is sort of a curiosity of mine, I'd like to know which one of them is most common in Europe and Italy in particular.
Yeah. Thank you, Ramon, for the question. Sandro Corsi. even if there are many times that I'm following each time. Okay, the scheme is very simple because the primary cabin has its own feeder, and then the grid or the primary cabin is in some way autonomous, linked with the primary cabin itself. In some particular circumstances, you need to feed the grid of the primary cabin because the primary cabin is one, the other one is isolated. But it's a very seldom and very rare operating condition. Generally speaking, each cabin has its own grid, and then its control is autonomous related to its own feeders and generators.
Okay, so that brings me to just a quick follow-up. So translating it to the Brazilian reality, in Brazil, we have lots of synchronous generators connected as distributed generators to low and medium voltage feeders. And they are mainly willing to sell active power with no reimbursements whatsoever for providing reactive power or voltage control. So do you see any conflict or any other solution other than imposing them mandatorily to maintain the voltage in their bus bars, their terminal bus bars?
I want to say those generators should have their step-up transformer, I suppose. Okay, so they have the local voltage control at the low voltage side, at the stator edge of the generator. So this should work like in the transmission and so on. The generator is exactly the same, no conflicts. I do not get your point about those generators are not allowed to deliver reactive power.
It's not that they're not allowed. It's that they make a contract with the utility to sell active power, so they have a power factor controller.
Okay.
Instead, okay. And they sort of lose the ability to control voltage.
Good. I want to say, in terms of ancillary services, this control I propose simplify the recognition of the support to the voltage servicing in this case. If you have a generator that is limited in the capability curves, so it's not allowed to deliver reactive power, or visually is simply deliver active power, but it's not recognize its control support in terms of voltage ancillary services. But I do not see any conflict, because the two can be managed in parallel, the power delivery control and also the voltage control.
Thank you.
The
idea
was like
that
you know, if I miss anyone, I need big glasses. I just sort of wave around.
Claudio Canizares, University of Guadalupe. Let me start by congratulating Costas. I don't see him around, but an excellent, outstanding meeting. I mean, he was saying that it wasn't perfect, but for me, this is pretty close to perfection. So congratulations to Costas. Second, I would like to comment briefly on Pierluigi's, sorry if I mispronounce your name, work. I mean, we've been working with this for 6-7 years, following the lead from Professor Anderson in these concepts of energy hub systems, in which you have all these, you start looking at a holistic view of energy. It's not more only electricity. You have to look at thermal, you have to look at many other energy vectors. And I think that's reasonably the way to go. In fact, we're applying for a center in Canada where we are mixing, basically looking at energy from a transportation point of view, basically thermal point of view, electricity point of view. You cannot just keep these doing independently. In fact, there's a company now in Ontario, Impala is the name, in which they're basically using thermal systems to provide frequency control services to the ISO. It's happening, right? So, and I believe that's, I fully agree that that's the way to go. Now, my question is for Sandro. You pose an interesting problem, which is this coordinated regulation, but not only through the feeder. We've been working on trying to coordinate the voltage on the feeder. But now you say, well, now you go even beyond, and David Hill was mentioning that the possibility of looking at you know, coordinate not only the control at the level, but basically further up the line. I guess conceptually makes sense. The problem we're having with this idea is that, first of all, you have a lot of conflicted interest. So the generation, and Rodrigo was mentioning that, might not want to regulate the voltage because that costs them money. They might need some incentives, fair enough, but what kind of incentives? It's been already hard enough to get the big generators to coordinate voltage at the transmission level. So if you start now thinking about little generators down the line, it's a bit of a, it's a problem, right? The other issue that I see is that now you have also loads regulating voltage. In Ontario, for example, we're working on a project right now throughout the province of Ontario on how implement basically voltage regulation at load levels now, in which they're trying to now save energy, because that basically they have incentives, when they have incentives, they're getting paid for that, and it's good for them, because energy reduction, right? So in that context now, it's not only the generators now, now you have loads involved in the voltage regulation at the feeder level.
Yeah.
So conceptually, conceptually it's an interesting idea. I've just questioned the practicality of it.
Okay.
Given the fact that what we know about the generation voltage coordination at the transmission level. So your comments would be very helpful.
Thank you, Claudio, for this interesting question that allow me to clarify better the proposal. You put the question of the coordination between the voltage control in the transmission and the voltage control in the distribution. And this concept is very important. When I talk about the link between the regional dispatcher in the transmission and the distribution control center, I just was referring to this need to exchange information, because if the distribution, at the distribution level, you cannot control the voltage if there is not a link between the decision at the nearby transmission grid and so on. Because otherwise, if they move autonomously, visually you have a big problem in the distribution to measure. I also said that you can control the high voltage bus bar, but in case of visually you do not have so nearby control at the transmission level of the voltage control in the transmission nearby this primary cabin. Otherwise, you cannot select this high voltage bus bar to compete with the other voltage control in the transmission. You have to move to the controlling the medium voltage bus bar. So the decision of the structure must be also defined according to the situation, and the information must be changed between the regional dispatcher and the transmission and the distribution. So also according to the voltage reactive power contractual bond, if any, I don't know, because could be that in some cases you have a different need in a given primary cabin control. In one case, you have the generator that are built there to provide support to the transmission. In this case, you are interested to deliver active power, reactive power, and so on. In other cases, you are, as you said, in Canada, interested to control the voltage in the local load. And according to that, I want to say I showed that the solution in some way control the voltage in the load, even if control inside the band. Okay, so inside the band. So. This is a simplification. If you want integral control of the given load, obviously this solution does not allow this kind of a control in that given load. But the proposed solution allows to control the voltage at the load inside a given bulb. But generally speaking, this is enough for the
On to
Claire. Yeah, no, just
Yeah, okay, nice. No, thanks, Claudio, for your comments. Yeah, I agree that this sort of framework is everywhere. I mean, it's needed, really, because otherwise the idea of all this work is to try to capture the synergies and to understand how you can extract value from the interaction of energy vectors. Because really, we talk about the value in power systems, but we talk a lot about flexibility. And we sometimes don't realize that actually flexibility and value can be extracted from the energy vector. So that's really the idea of the framework. And yeah, I'm aware of the publications also that it is. So thanks for your comment. Yeah.
So there's a question out the back, and then there was one next one was down here, and then we'll work it out after that.
Gregor Verbich, University of Sydney, Australia. I have a question for Felipe. You seem to be assuming a wake model to estimate the wind speed in the second draw of the turbine. So this relates to the second point of your methodology. How reliable is this given the variability of wind speed and the changing direction?
I believe you are...
Please state name.
I'm sorry. Luis Vargas, University of Chile. Could you rephrase your question, please? I couldn't catch it.
Basically, you seem to be using a model to estimate the wind speed, taking into account the wake effect. My question is, how reliable is this? I mean, do you trust the model given the turbulent nature of the wind? Or do you maybe have an idea how you can benchmark the model against measurements?
Yes. We actually just took the model that we presented in the paper. We didn't make any testing for the reliability or comparing results, experimental and field test measures, because the main objective of the paper was actually towards assessing the dimension of operating reserves, or the impact of operating reserves of the huge penetration that this small system is going to receive in the next future. But yes, we didn't actually went into that detail on the testing on the model. Thank you.
Dreman Soldo, Air Grid Ireland. A question for Pierluigi. Actually, this is a very fascinating topic. What I would like to understand, because your paper was dealing with ancillary service provision, are you thinking of a kind of top-down approach with the macro sector represented first, and then the electricity sector to be incorporate results with traditional tools, or are you thinking of something like a bottom-up instead, so that you create equivalent behavior of load that could then be managed with the traditional tool and have indication of the trade-off between the worth of shifting the policies?
Yeah, I will talk. Pierluigi Mancari, University of Manchester. Yeah, thanks for the question. I would say that you can have a merge of the two approaches, actually. So the way that this was formulated was the second point, so looking really at the distributed part. Then say, if you look at this as distributed energy system and you try to understand the techno-economics of the system, how it can provide services to power system itself, starting from distributed part. But you can incorporate this into a system level framework where actually you create basically a model of the operation of the system, and this would be like more related to the first one. So the first approach. So I would say that the way it is now, it's more the second part. But eventually, the two things will be merged together. So that's the idea.
Okay, Alex.
Alex Papalexopoulos, Eco International. This is a paper from Italy. I missed part of your presentation. So if you have answered this question, I apologize. I'm trying to understand the economics of your model. How you're talking about some fees, how the exercise fee and the availability fee are set, who pays whom, and how these dollars are recovered.
Yeah. So thanks, Pierluigi Mancarella again, University of Manchester. So thanks, Alex. So the idea was to understand if you have such a system where you can basically understand the economics of the distributed system subject to market prices. For instance, you have real-time prices for electricity, you have gas prices, and so on. Then on top of it, you also have some sort of signals or possibilities to participate in to provision of further services, such as reserve service, for instance. Then how you can optimize the operation of the system, taking into account all these different market contexts. So in this sense, the model is really looking at the operation of the distributed system subject to signals that it receives. And in this context, the availability fees and the exercise fees are actually sort of parameters coming as signals from the market. So once you have this as an input, you would then optimize your system. So it's not in the outlook of designing the market or things like this. It's really like you receive these signals, and for instance, the values we use are sort of typical values you could find in the UK market, pretty much. And then you see how the economics of this distributed system would be to respond to these signals.
So the availability fee is kind of a capacity?
Yes, yes. Basically, yes.
Signal
yes,
or some yes. sort?
Yeah, it would be basically you enter a contract with the network operator. We say you will be given if you may be called or not, but we have this capacity available for the network operator if it's needed, and then you would just be paid to make this capacity available to a network operator.
Well, there's no capacity market in the UK.
No, but you can do this, for instance, for the for reserve services. So you can enter a reserve contract, and there will be the sorts of different components. So that's why the framework is sort of general to deal with different types of mechanism. In the reserve markets will be of this type. So you enter the market, then you say you are paid anyway availability fee because you can provide this reserve, and if you are called upon on top of it, you will also be paid the exercise fee.
All right, thank you.
Göran Andersson, ETH Zurich. Well, it's another question for Pierre Luigi here. The first one is you are looking for a connection between Torino and Manchester, and I have one. Juventus and Manchester are performing equally bad in Champions League nowadays. So that might be the reason. Okay.
I had to say I support AC Milan. So
that's okay, that's a code turner. Well, and then I want to concur with what Claudio said earlier, that I think this analysis is very interesting, and it's my congratulations for an excellent work. I have a more technical question. You say here that you use an energy hub-like model, so I would be interested to hear what are the differences between your approach and the energy hub that we introduced a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah, it's. I mean, in this case, thanks for the question. Pierluigi Mancarelli, University of Manchester. Yes. No, I mean, in this case, the system was really like the power plant, the sort of multi-generation plant was really modeled as a hub, basically. But there were no networks, interconnections, so on. So the focus was really on the plant. And the model for the energy optimization is basically your model you use, so the nonlinear model with the matrix representation and so on. Then starting from there, basically we model the provision of ancillary services by forcing to provide a certain amount of energy, for instance, and so on. So we modify slightly the optimization point by adding some constraints, but the backbone is actually is your model. What I think could be done is because the model is intrinsically non-linear, as you know, and then you need to look for multi-start optimization just to look the initial solution and everything. There are ways to disaggregate disaggregate the equations, and then you may end up with a linear model sometimes if all the functions are linear. But in this case, we also want to take into account the off-design characteristics of the piece of equipment. Once you do this, I think it's quite hard to linearize the model anyway. So this could be another approach that we used in other papers. But in this one, the model is really like your model, basically.
Okay, Göran Andersson again. Just a quick comment. I think you should look into the work that Ian and Mats Almasalki did in University of Michigan, because they came up with very nice ways of solving this for large systems.
Yeah, I know the work. I know this work. Yeah. Thanks.
Yannis Blanas from the Independent Transmission Operator of Greece. I wanted to say that it was a very good approach from all speakers in the previous today. Everything was pretty well approached. But I am asking you, I feel that there is a delay from the industry to respond to all these ideas and actually proposals, because they are very clear what to do. And also I feel that there is no standardization behind all these new solutions. Is there any information on this? Thanks. It is to all speakers, if there is any information.
Lucas Rigest from Pontificius Comillas University. I tried to answer at least what you're doing is good. I was presenting this control issues of batteries, which is part of a national grant on storage system on the Canary Islands. We are collaborating with Endesa. So what's actually going on is they're still testing these technologies. Actually, just after a summer break, we will get some results of this mentioned supercapacitor in one of the islands, so we get the actual measurements and we'll try to validate both system data and system model and the supercapacitor model. But the stage is what I say, it's testing and there is nothing really on. So we're really trying to figure out the best way to operate the storage system. We did an analysis on the multitasking of storage systems, and it seems to be beneficial for the system in terms of decreasing system cost of 6-7%, depends on the item, and it really much depends on that, but it's testing case.
From my side, our work was actually promoted by the ISO of the Northern Interconnected System, because this is, my students show, is thermal, and they have none wind power now, but they will expect over 1,000 in the next 3 years. So they are really, really concerned about how to size the impact of this amount of energy in the system. So they actually work all along with us. They provide us with the data for the interconnected system and the scheduling of the power plants and so on. So yes, in our case at least, this was very, very linked with the ISO.
Maybe, just a quick comment. Peter John Kerr, University of Manchester. Yes, when you talk about integration of different energy vectors, well, the idea is certainly that industry is a little bit behind or quite behind. We have now a project with National Grid where we're looking to integration of electricity and gas network operation, but even within National Grid, I mean, their businesses are totally separated, really, and it's hard sometimes to talk between them and with them, but slowly it seems that we're moving to the direction, because as we were saying before, they're recognizing that they're missing an opportunity to try to extract value from this interaction and optimization, but certainly industry is a little bit behind. Hopefully we'll catch it.
So there are a number of the students who haven't asked questions the whole week, and there's no lunch until you ask questions. I know free lunch.
Thanks, Ian. Rodrigo Ramos from University of São Paulo, Brazil. My question is to the last presenter, and congratulations on the presentation. I've seen that you've shown also different types of grids for which you're proposing your idea. For the isolated grids, it seems an interesting proposal. But in large transmission systems, we have this concept that we use not so carefully sometimes of that is the infinite bus. From the DG viewpoint, a similar concept has arrived, which is the point of common coupling, which for dynamic studies may be, you have to be careful about it when you use it as well. So my question is, you've been careful enough to put something called a large area as opposed to a PCC in your first test system, which is connected to the main grid. How did you model the main grid in these simulations? Was it an equivalent? What type of model did you use to simulate the main grid?
In order to model the large area, I didn't understand exactly the question.
Well, there's a system, one of the systems in page 3 of your work.
Yeah.
There's a synchronous generator connected to a large system.
Okay.
You've been careful enough not to put a PCC over there, but a large system, since you're providing frequency regulation to the system as well. So how did you model this large system? What was the type of model so you can get the response of this large system to the frequency regulation you're providing to it?
Okay, the large system is just an infinite bus, so there is nothing specific on the model.
So did you model it as an infinite bus?
Yeah, yeah.
So there would be no frequency deviations from in this bus.
Only for only the transient events. And also because the transmission lines, the transient events are huge.
So the transients would come only from the synchronous generator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Other questions?
Sakis Meliopoulos from Georgia Tech. I have a couple of questions for two authors, I guess. First of all, about the virtual synchronous generator. I was not able to read the paper, but in the presentation I have not seen one of the limitations of the systems, and specifically, if we have an actual synchronous generator, it has a lot of capability to provide a lot of electric current and so on, but when we're dealing with the systems, there is a limitation of how much current they deliver. Have you included in the model the limitation that the current that these systems can deliver is limited? And then I will follow the question for another author as well.
Okay, so very good question. Vasileksa Panasios.
Closer to the microphone.
Yes. Actually, there is an ongoing conversation about the technical community about that thing. For instance, some TSOs have incorporate the virtual inertia for to support the system stability. For example, in California, but in Europe the thing is a little bit different. For example, the renewable UK. In a paper before a year, says that the virtual inertia is not the proper way to support the system, but more, but a frequency regulation which is more responsive. So this is an ongoing debate about the virtual inertia, and it remains to see what the technical community will say.
Okay, but no matter how you do it, eventually there are going to be some transients incurred by the control. And then the question is, Does the control scheme include the limitation of the current of the systems?
Problem, the only problem with the control scheduling is the complexity of the algorithms you try to solve.
Okay. That is. Thanks. Okay. And this is Aksim Aliopoulos again, another question for Sandro. Sandro, in your scheme, obviously the issue is that we have the transmission system, we have the generation system, the distribution system, and we have the big gorilla on the transmission and the distribution system. And one of the issues is basically the limitations at every instant of time. So my question is this. I like your scheme, first of all, that you proposed. But my question is the following. What is the infrastructure that is required for this scheme to work perfectly? In other words, to feed the information you need for this controller. Do you think the present SCADA system is enough, or we need to move into more reliable and more detailed schemes that will provide the information that is needed for this control scheme?
Okay, Sandro Corsi. Thank you, Sakis, for the question. No, I asked the proposal move to a simplification in the control structure. In the same way, the solution is open to different way to be realized. I want to say that mostly is the automation of the substation, that the primary cabin substation that should charge the rule of the this different voltage, frequency, reactive power, so control according to the and the simplification. Also, remember the question of Claudio is that having this automation, the distribution control center simply has to send some reference to this primary cabin automation. So the way is the hierarchy is the way to have a real-time control according to the automation of the primary cabin and have a computing in agreement with the transmission of the set points. The automation of the cabin could be also could charge in a centralized way, most of the rule in terms of a control, in terms of limiting the take into account of the limit of the generator and so on. Or you can have also near the generator some decentralized functions. So in other words, the solution can be simple and can be it is flexible to me. Depend on the situation, which is the renewal, or what can be done, what is more easy to do. But visually, there is an exchange of the information between the generator, load, voltage measurement along the feeder, and the automation of the primary cabin. Thank you.
Claudio Canizares, University of Waterloo. I just wanted to follow up with your last comment, Sandro. The problem I was referring to is that there are developments at the distribution system level in which you are now setting up reference points for the feeder to control the voltage on the feeder, coordinating with whatever resources you have for voltage management on the feeder, load generators. These setting points could be in conflict with the ones you are sending from the transmission system, right? According to the scheme you have in mind. So the transmission system says, oh, well, the set point for these feeders should be, I don't know, 1.1, 1.05 or whatever. Whereas the system on the other side said, no, well, it should be 0.95 to put things in extreme, right? Then you have this conflict. They said, well, for the system, it's good for you to be high, but for the feeder, it's for me to be low. And that's what I was referring to, this conflict of, you end up with this conflict of, you know,
yeah.
Interesting. Thanks.
I try to, of course, Sandro, I try to give an answer to this point. If you see and you manage the control in a way that the primary cabin is an equivalent generator or load, you have simply, you have you manage your transmission control, take into account that this primary cabin could be a source to have some active power, absorbing or delivering some reactive power, and so on. So and having a kind of a support in terms of a voltage, because if the primary cabin locally control the voltage at the medium voltage bus, this is an help to the transmission, okay? So you have this kind of equivalent generator that control the voltage, we say, in the medium voltage bus, and at the same time, this kind of a generator is something that includes loads, and these loads are with a discontinuous control, maintained the voltage at the load buses inside a given confidence band. This is the idea, and I do not see any conflict with the transmission control, but probably we need to understand better each other about it.
So at that point, this concludes the conference, actually. So I think it would be good to thank the speakers from this session, to thank the speakers from the entire week, but a very special thanks to Kostas Mouras, who disappeared.
Thank you so much, and as I said once before, doing it a second time is a good advertisement for whoever wants to take one over. Okay, thank you all for coming, and let's enjoy the trip to Knossos and Heraklion.